Coming up is the news.
No end in sight to the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians as occupation forces shot a young man near the West Bank city of Ramallah. Iran slams three European countries' plan to retain sanctions over its defense missile program, saying that Tehran reserves the right to respond in kind. And Russia says it has foiled Ukrainian missile attacks on several regions, including Crimea, as Kiev claims advances in the southern fronts. This is news. Thanks for joining us. Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian was shot dead near Deir Netham, or Netham, in Ramallah area. Regime troopers opened fire at 33-year-old Bilal Qada over an alleged grenade attack on an Israeli settlement. Ramallah area has been a flashpoint over the past months amid stepped-up Israeli violence across the West Bank. The regime has killed nearly 200 Palestinian shootings and raids in the region since the turn of the year. One of the most high-profile was the deadly aerial and ground attacks on Jenin refugee camp last week. It left 12 Palestinians dead. Israel's far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gvir has announced that the regime forces will no longer seize guns from settlers who shoot Palestinians in the occupied territories. Ben-Gvir's announcement comes at a time when Palestinians have been experiencing brutal attacks by settlers and the regime forces almost on a daily basis. The new decision is aimed at encouraging settlers to carry weapons and to use them against Palestinians in the wake of anti-Israeli operations. It marks a shift in Israeli policy on settlers' crimes. Previously, settlers' guns were confiscated if they shot at Palestinians. The new policy shift comes as the occupied territories have witnessed ramped-up violence against Palestinians since the formation of a new far-right coalition cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. 9 years have passed since Israel's 50-day onslaught on the Gaza Strip, and still no justice for the victims. Israeli war criminals continue to roam free, as Palestinians continue to suffer. Ashraf Shannon has more details.
In July 2014, Israeli forces waged an all-out war against the Gaza Strip that lasted for 50 days. During the course of the onslaught, Israeli forces killed some 2,200 people, including hundreds of innocent women and children. A further 11,000 were wounded. According to human rights organizations, the Israeli attacks on Palestinians during the 2014 war were systematic and deliberate, with disproportionate and excessive force used against civilians. Rights groups demand that Israeli war criminals be brought to justice.
9 years ago, Israel waged an all-out war on Gaza and committed war crimes. Israel used the tactic of bombing buildings with civilians inside and also attacked United Nations shelters. We have documented the killings and injuring of Palestinian civilians and the mass destruction of civilian infrastructure. We call on international legal bodies, including the International Criminal Court, to investigate the Israeli crimes and to hold the perpetrators accountable.
The 2014 war also saw the bombardment of thousands of homes and the displacement of around 500,000 people. The Israeli regime has consistently failed to make any attempt to hold individuals at any level responsible for the war crimes and crimes against humanity.
I was injured and my 6-year-old son was killed. 3 of my cousins were also killed. My family, along with 10 other families, were hiding in the basement when it was hit by an Israeli rocket.
During the 2014 war, the Israeli regime displayed callous indifference, launching attacks on family homes in the densely populated coastal strip. This is while the United States and other Western countries provided billions of dollars worth of military aid to the Israeli regime during and after the 2014 onslaught on Gaza.
The Israeli regime has shown zero accountability for the crimes perpetrated by its troops, due to the protection it enjoys from the international community, especially from the United States. These actions encourage Israel to commit more crimes against the Palestinian people.
Despite Israel's grave violations of international law, Palestinians continue to suffer due to international apathy.
Experts say that the Israeli regime has committed acts that amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Gaza Strip since 2008. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Tehran slams the joint statement by the UK, Germany, and France on maintaining sanctions on all exports of military equipment by Iran over its missile program. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman, Nasser Kanani, said the move is unconstructive and that Tehran reserves the right to respond in kind. Earlier, the three European countries said that they will maintain the sanctions, allegedly based on the U.S. Security Council Resolution 2231. The measures are due to expire in October based on the sunset provisions in the resolution. Elsewhere in his remarks, Kanani reiterated using all available means to secure national rights with regard to peaceful nuclear technology. He said indirect discussions are underway with parties to the 2015 nuclear deal. Iran says Canada, Sweden, Ukraine, and Britain are pursuing their political objectives by referring an accidental downing of a Ukrainian plane to the International Court of Justice. In a statement, the foreign ministry accused the four Western countries of failing to make good on their own stated commitment to resolve the issue through diplomatic channels. The ministry said Iran had formed an independent technical group right after the incident and took necessary actions to investigate the tragic occurrence. As the statement added, Iran immediately issued visas to experts from Ukraine and Canada to visit the site of the accident and also prepared a report with the cooperation of foreign experts. On Wednesday, Canada, Sweden, Ukraine, and Britain brought a legal case against Iran at the top UN court. They accused the Islamic Republic of failing to take necessary measures to prevent the downing of the plane, which killed all 176 people on board in January 2020. Journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas says the International Criminal Court is a biased and Eurocentric institution.
But this is first of all part of a context of Iranophobia and really basically trying to checkmate Iran in some way or shape or form. Now, the other thing is, of course, the ICC is an important organization to analyze, the International Criminal Court as well, which I'll come on to. But first of all, If all of this is so heartfelt from these nations, then they ought really to open the book on the Iran Air Flight 655, which was a passenger flight, we all know, heading from Tehran to Dubai, that was shot down by two MR surface-to-air missiles that were fired by who? The USS Vincennes, a guided missile cruiser of the US Navy. Nobody was ever brought to book over that, and I think the Americans haven't even had the courtesy to apologize for the hundreds of lives that were lost there. So that deals with hypocrisy. The second issue is really who are they taking this complaint to? The International Criminal Court has already been highlighted by certainly the African nations as an institution which has a bias, has a Eurocentricism about it, has a racist track record, because in up to 2016, it only selected more or less 9 African nations for whatever actions, legal actions that they took part in.
Russia says it has thwarted a Ukrainian missile attack on its soil. Russia's defense ministry says its air defenses intercepted the missile attack that targeted Crimea and the Rostov and Kaluga regions. No casualties have been reported. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said in a broadcast comment that the country's troops were making advances against Russian forces in the southern and eastern fronts. The Ukrainian military claimed that its troops have so far recaptured a large part of the land on the southern front, as well as territory near the eastern city of Bakhmut. The military said the gains were achieved since its counteroffensive began last month. Bakhmut has been a flashpoint of fighting and is controlled by forces affiliated with Russia. Russia says the U.S. has, in effect, confessed to committing war crimes by providing internationally banned cluster munitions to Ukraine. The Russian embassy to the U.S. made the remark in reaction to a statement by the spokesman for the White House National Security on the supply. On Sunday, John Kirby defended the Biden administration's decision to send cluster munitions to Ukraine, despite the weapons' risk to civilians. The move has been met with a backlash, both inside and outside of the U.S. Congressional Democrats have raised concerns over the move, saying the decision could inspire other countries to sidestep an international convention barring such munitions. Key U.S. allies, including France, Germany, and the U.K., have also defied Washington's decision. The U.S. Treasury Secretary has wrapped up her visit to China, which was dominated by talks over trade and tech disputes. Janet Yellen says Washington and Beijing have made some progress and will have more frequent contact in the future. She vowed that any curbs on U.S. outbound investments would be transparent and very narrowly targeted. In an earlier address in Beijing, Yellen warned against a decoupling of the two economic powers. The Treasury Secretary said the U.S. and its allies will fight back against what she called China's unfair economic practices. Beijing has, in turn, called on Washington to stop weaponizing and politicizing trade and tech. Those are just two of the host of sticking points between China and the U.S. Last month, Secretary of State Antony Blinken also visited Beijing. China says the U.S. should take concrete actions to improve trade ties.
The U.S. Treasury Secretary has wrapped up a four-day visit to China with the aim of opening the line of communication and bringing long-running tensions between Washington and Beijing to an end.
A number of issues, including climate and U.S. restrictions on Chinese chip industry, were among topics discussed during the first 2 days of Janet Yellen's visit, but economy and trade co-centered the issues discussed. The U.S. official during the visit said she went to China to deepen communication and work toward a stable and constructive relationship between the two countries.
Amid a complicated global economic outlook, there is a pressing need for the two largest economies to closely communicate and exchange views on our responses to various challenges.
Yellen said, "We believe that it is in the best interest of both countries to make sure that we have direct and clear lines of communication at senior levels." Yellen also took aim at China's planned economy, urging Beijing to turn to more market-oriented practices. She suggested that a shift toward market reforms would be in China's interests. The U.S. Treasury Secretary also held a meeting with Chinese Vice Premier He Lifeng. During the meeting, Yellen said Washington and Beijing must communicate directly when they have concerns about each other's specific economic practices. Yellen noted that the United States and China, the world's two biggest economies, must compete fairly and communicate closely to avoid misunderstandings. Yellen stressed that Washington is not seeking a winner-take-all approach or economic advantage in its relations with Beijing, but wanted to ensure a healthy competition with what she called a fair set of rules that would benefit both countries over time. Yellen's trip is part of a flurry of visits U.S. authorities claim will ease tensions between Washington and Beijing. Last month, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken visited China and held high-level discussions with Chinese officials, including President Xi Jinping. The two officials agreed that the mutual rivalry should not turn into conflict. The visit came ahead of a possible meeting between U.S. President Joe Biden and President Xi as soon as September's G20 summit in New Delhi.
As Yellen concludes her visit to China, it's clear that several disputes remain fundamental in Washington-Beijing relations and not easy to settle. Issues including Taiwan's independence, U.S. military buildup in Asia-Pacific, and Washington's restrictions on Chinese chip industry are among those differences.
Janet Yellen's visit to China comes as Washington and Beijing are already at odds over a string of issues. Apart from economy and trade, one core still unresolved problem between the two powers is the issue of Taiwan. Tensions over Taiwan have been escalating ever since the United States enhanced its military buildup in the South China Sea in an effort to contain Beijing. After all, China has territorial claims over the self-ruled island and has warned against any move that jeopardizes its sovereignty and territorial integrity. But regardless of those elements, Washington has continued with its collision course with Beijing over the issue of Taiwan. Testimony to that was a trade deal the U.S. struck with Taiwan to deepen economic relations between both sides, a move that sparked a stern warning from Beijing. China strongly lashed out at the U.S., calling on Washington to stop official exchanges with Taiwan under the guise of trade. Other than the trade deal with Taiwan, Washington also held joint massive drills with other countries, including Canada in the South China Sea, despite repeated warnings from Beijing against any such moves. Not to mention that U.S. vessels have repeatedly sailed through the Taiwan Strait, drawing outrage from China. The recent tensions have prompted Chinese officials to question the U.S. presence in the Asia-Pacific region. Chinese Defense Ministry has called on Washington to pull its military presence away from areas near China. Indeed, the question that arises is that how would the United States react if Chinese destroyers sail through areas close to U.S. borders in the North Atlantic or the North Pacific Oceans or anywhere near the Gulf of Mexico? Given all such differences, what comes to the spotlight is the aim of Yellen's visit to Beijing and her meeting with Chinese officials. Many believe that the trip will bring no tangible results since the two biggest powers have so far not been able to resolve their most fundamental problems, including the Taiwan issue. What further complicates the situation is the respect the United States does not have for international law when it comes to its own interests. Taking that into consideration, any such trip aimed at easing tensions will be senseless.
North Korea has threatened to shoot down American reconnaissance planes should they cross into the country's airspace. Pyongyang issued the warning after it claimed a U.S. reconnaissance plane recently violated its airspace near the East Coast. The North also denounced what it called the move by the U.S. to introduce a nuclear-powered ballistic missile submarine to waters near the Korean Peninsula. Pyongyang said such actions would create a situation that brings a nuclear conflict closer to reality. The North added that Washington's deployment of strategic nuclear assets to the Korean Peninsula is a blatant nuclear blackmail against North Korea, as well as regional countries, and poses a grave threat to peace. South Koreans have hit the streets of the capital, Seoul, to protest against Japan's plan to release contaminated water from the Fukushima nuclear plant into the Pacific Ocean. The IAEA chief, Rafael Grossi, has traveled to the South Korean capital to reassure officials and opposition there that the water release will not harm humans or the environment. And that does it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei elaborates on six key points of Imam Khomeini's testament, June 4, 2018. If a nation wants to rid itself of the pressures from aggressors, and today the bullying of the U.S., it must stand up to the U.S. with full strength and determination. Just take a look at the behavior of American statement, the U.S. president and his cabinet members, and observe their rhetoric. Their style of speech is similar to that of psychopathic personalities. They make threats. They order assassinations. They slander. They helplessly beg for assistance. They attack the stability and security for other nations. They horse around like a bunch of lunatics. Their behavior is not characteristics of the logical, wise politicians. Of course, this behavior is due in large part to the reflection of American failure in different parts of the world. Their failure in Afghanistan and Iraq. They entered Iraq and Afghanistan with the promise of freedom, democracy, and human rights.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Today, after the passage of several years, the situation in these two countries is so severe that no nation would want to be in the same situation. Insecurity, power, increasing domination of arrogant power, jeopardizing their national interests, disregarding the right of the people, and the subsequent total failure in achieving the goals they had once announced, or the interior motives they had not announced, are very prevalent there. These failures are reflected in the behavior of American politicians and in their discord, disagreement, and decisions. That is the way the global bullies behave. What should one do to confront this bullying? The imam's advice was to resist. Fortunately, today all the political groups in the country express their loyalty to the path of the imam. This is an auspicious phenomenon. This was not the case in some eras after the revolution. There were some political movements that openly talked about turning their backs on the imam's path. Fortunately, today, political groups in our country talk about their inclination towards the thoughts and path of the imam. One of the most prominent points of the imam's path, which is reflected in his testament and all his remarks, is the need for determined resistance against covetous, arrogant power.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The U.S. has made a decision that it will send Ukraine the deadly cluster munitions. The U.S. went on a media blitz to make its case that its decision was justified. From the White House to the Pentagon...
I'm as concerned about the humanitarian circumstance as anybody. But the worst thing for civilians in Ukraine is for Russia to win the war.
To Jake Sullivan, President Joe Biden's national security advisor...
And I'm not going to stand up here and say it is easy. It's a difficult decision. It's a decision we deferred. It's a decision that required a real hard look at the potential harm to civilians.
But are there any doubts about why cluster munitions should not be used and why they are deadly? Cluster bombs carry several hundred bomblets or cluster munitions. Dropped by aircraft or launched from the ground, they're designed to be dispersed over a wide area, which can cover the size of several soccer fields. As they are free-falling, they can strike the ground at a considerable distance from the target area if they are not used correctly. And what makes cluster munitions so controversial is their impact on civilian populations.
The problem with cluster munitions is dud rate. Because these munitions drop large numbers of what are bomblets, depending on how they land, some of them don't go off and will hang around. And that number is anywhere from 2% on up, depending on the terrain, and civilians can happen upon these duds, and they can cause civilian casualties.
According to the International Committee of the Red Cross,
up to 40% of cluster bombs result in unexploded rounds or duds, which can cause civilian deaths long after a conflict is over. The Convention on Cluster Munitions is a convention banning the use of cluster bombs and has been joined by more than 120 countries. The U.S., however, is not a signatory to this convention, even though it is a member of the Organization on the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, OPCW. Decades after the conflict, they continue to kill. According to the group Handicap International, 98% of cluster bomb victims are civilians, and 27% are children. When the U.S. president was asked why he was providing the cluster munitions now, part of an $800 million security package, he said it was because Ukraine had run out of ammunition.
Mr. President, cluster munitions, why now?
We've run out of ammunition.
The Secretary General supports the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which, as you know, was adopted 15 years ago, and he wants countries to abide by the terms of that convention. And so as a result, of course, he does not want there to be continued use of cluster munitions on the battlefield.
The U.S.-backed Saudi war on Yemen. Officially, still not over. It has resulted in the death of hundreds of thousands. Some of those killed, which were mainly women and children, were a result of cluster munitions, courtesy of the U.S.
Children are the main victim of cluster bombs because the remains of the bombs come into forms of foreign and metallic luster objects and looks like toys. Victims usually lose their eyes and suffer from deformities in their bodies.
Yet, the U.S. use of cluster munitions have not been restricted to Yemen. The U.S. initially used cluster bombs during the invasion of Afghanistan that began in 2001. The U.S. dropped more than 1,500 cluster bombs in that country during the first 3 years of the occupation. It is very telling that not only did the U.S. not have any regard for using these outlawed bombs, but the amount used showed complete disregard for human lives, particularly for women and children, who are still being murdered to this day. And it doesn't end there. The Biden administration has also agreed to provide Ukraine with depleted uranium shells to equip Abrams tanks that the U.S. is sending there. Britain has already delivered these tanks to Ukraine, equipped with depleted uranium shells. DU munitions developed in the 1970s are not nuclear weapons and do not produce a nuclear explosion, but soldiers or civilians can be exposed to the uranium either in combat or afterward. This was particularly the case in Iraq, when during the U.S. 2003 invasion, heavy use of depleted uranium caused many to die and suffer to this day of diseases which have led to things like birth defects. Instead of searching for a political solution, U.S. and U.K. governments clearly believe that providing DU munitions will improve Ukraine's ability to defeat Russian tanks and bring this conflict to an end. What is even more telling is that the U.S. has said that Ukraine has run out of ammo, in particular the 155mm howitzer, putting into question Ukraine's ability to continue this war. The 155mm howitzer round is one of the most requested artillery munitions of the Ukraine war. The U.S. has already shipped more than 1.5 million rounds to Ukraine, but Kiev is still seeking more. Even though both Russia and Ukraine have been accused of using cluster munitions, which have killed civilians on both sides, the Russian ambassador to the U.S., Anatoly Antonov, criticized the transfer of these weapons to Ukraine by the U.S. The cruelty and cynicism with which Washington has approached the issue of transferring lethal weapons to Kiev is striking. Now, by the fault of the U.S., there will be a risk for many years that innocent civilians will be blown up by submunitions that have failed. Do these civilians deserve this fate due to the U.S. desire to weaken Russia, the purported aim of the U.S. supporting Ukraine in this war? It has been described as an unprecedented restriction on people in France, Lawmakers have agreed that the country's police forces need to be allowed to spy on suspects by remotely activating the camera, microphone, and GPS of their phones and other devices. The measure agreed by lawmakers covers laptops, cars, and other connected objects, as well as phones. It further allows devices to be remotely activated to record sound and images of people allegedly suspected of terror offenses, as well as delinquency and organized crime. Rights activists have slammed the measure as, quote, an authoritarian snooper's charter. A digital rights group has slammed the provision, saying it raises serious concerns over infringements of fundamental liberties. La Quadrature du Net has called for the proposal as part of a, quote, slide into heavy-handed security. In early June, the French Senate, the upper house, approved a controversial provision to a justice bill that allowed law enforcement to eavesdrop on suspected terrorists and criminals using their devices.
The message from the top has generally been one to support the police and to reinforce their powers. And it has to be borne in mind that the police have faced some significant challenges, especially in the previous decade, where France was subjected to a series of terrorist attacks. And there was a fear that the police didn't have strong enough powers to contain that. And so some of those powers were reinforced.
Moreover, senators approved the provision in the bill allowing law enforcement to track devices' location if the owner is suspected of committing a crime. The measures come amid unprecedented protests across France over the killing of a 17-year-old boy of Algerian origin by police in late June. Nahal's killing renewed old grievances regarding police brutality and racial profiling. It is estimated that some 3,400 to 4,000 people were arrested, which included more than 1,200 minors. Most of those arrested in the recent unrest had no previous criminal record. Meanwhile, there are concerns about restrictions on social media in France. France's digital minister, Jean-Noël Barrot, has announced that from August 25th, Paris will introduce mandatory measures censoring the work of social networks in the country. According to the French minister, President Macron had urged him to, quote, put maximum pressure on social networks. Barrot has also proposed to the Senate the creation of a working group to address measures to be taken in the event of mass protests and riots. Earlier, Macron claimed that protesters were using Snapchat, TikTok, and Telegram to film violent events and to organize illegal gatherings.
Social media platforms play a significant role in the events of the past few days. We have on several of them, Snapchat, TikTok, and several others, both the organization of violent gatherings and a form of mimicking of violence, which among the youngest leads to a feeling of unreality. It sometimes feels like some of them are experiencing in the streets the video games that have intoxicated them. And this, the law, including over the past few months, has set out changes to parent control that we want to be fully respected.
Macron has also discussed the possibility of banning access to certain social media features. Macron has told about 300 local leaders that the country needs to reflect on social media use among the youngest and on the prohibitions that must be put in place. Comments drew the ire of many critics.
These incidents just keep on happening, but this time it was captured on video, and that's why people are fuming. But Macron goes to his Elton John concert, and then he blames video games for the protests. Video games. Maybe his police officers play too many video games, and that's why they pulled out their guns on a 17-year-old without a driver's license. And one of them said, I'm going to put a bullet in your head. Macron now wants to ban sensitive content on social media because it's embarrassing for him. But dare Iran ban Twitter or Egypt cut off the internet, then Macron and the West will spring into their usual chorus of that's censorship and that's a dictatorship, no freedom of speech.
The French government has been accused of conducting attacks on migrants, racial profiling, and religious intolerance. Police killing has tapped into the long, festering resentment of police brutality among many French minorities and have rekindled a long, painful debate about racial profiling by police.
Iran became an SCO member during the 23rd virtual summit of the bloc, which started on Tuesday with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi as its chairperson. Iran first applied for membership in the alliance 15 years ago, but it took until 2021 for the request to be approved. The SCO, which has its headquarters in China, is a diplomatic organization with eight members, namely Russia, India, Pakistan, and the Central Asian countries of Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan. Iran and the organization started a formal process for Tehran's accession to the bloc in March 2022. In September of the same year, Iran signed a memorandum of commitment to join the SCO. A month later, the Iranian parliament approved the country's accession to the organization. Addressing the summit after Iran's accession, President Ebrahim Raisi called for cooperation among the SCO member states in the economic fields, saying this can open a clear vision of a just regional order to the eyes of the world nations. He has also warned against the dominance of the dollar in global exchanges, saying de-dollarization is a pivotal necessity to form a just international system.
Considering the experiences of the past decades, it's totally clear that besides militarism, what has prepared the ground for Western domination is the hegemony of the dollar. So any effort to form a fair international system requires the elimination of this tool of domination from regional ties.
Russian President Vladimir Putin, Chinese President Xi Jinping, and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, among others, welcomed Iran's accession into the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as the 9th full member of the influential Security and Trade Alliance. Being a Eurasian political, economic, international security and defense bloc, the SCO boasts to be the world's largest regional organization in terms of geographic scope and population, grouping around 40% of the world population in approximately 60% of Eurasia. The combined GDP of the SCO accounts for around 25% of the world's total, and with Iran now being a full member, the bloc will have control over around 20% of the world's oil reserves. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization plays a crucial role in creating regional and international convergence. As Iran continues to face economic sanctions, the Islamic Republic is seeking other forms to enhance its economic and political engagement with the Asian powers. Close interaction with neighbors and Muslim and like-minded countries has been a main priority of Tehran's foreign policy since Ebrahim Raisi took office as the president of Iran. Raisi has time and again stated that his administration will not tie the country's progress to talks aimed at the potential removal of the U.S.-led sanctions against Tehran, saying he seeks to enhance the country to such level of strength that would render it immune to sanctions. In recent years, Iran has strengthened its strategic cooperation with China and Russia to counter Western hegemony. Tehran also has sought stronger ties with Central Asian countries in key sectors, including energy and transit. For instance, Iran and Uzbekistan signed several bilateral agreements last year while Raisi visited the country for the last SCO summit. Iran in recent years has also signed several agreements with Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, and Tajikistan to expand economic and trade relations. Recent reports suggest that Iran's trade with SCO member states, excluding crude oil exports, reached nearly $50 billion in 2022, with China as Iran's foremost trade partner. Iran has recently engaged in an active diplomacy drive worldwide, strengthening bonds of friendship with neighboring countries and allies in other regions, notably Latin America. Last month, Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, had a five-day tour to South America. Dozens of cooperation documents were signed between Iran, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba during the trip. Tehran has also requested to become a member of another global organization, the BRICS group, with Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. The members of the BRICS group of emerging economies have welcomed the Islamic Republic's potential accession to the powerful bloc. Israel will buy its third fleet of F-35 stealth fighter jets in a deal worth $3 billion. The deal is set to be finalized in the coming months. Israel's Ministry of Military Affairs approved the purchase on Sunday, with the additional 25 aircraft manufactured by Lockheed Martin to bring the number of F-35 jets in Israel's Air Force to 75. It added in a statement, this new agreement will ensure the continuation of cooperation between American companies and Israeli military industries in the production of aircraft parts. In May 2018, Israel said it was the first to use the F-35 in combat. The purchase of the fighter jets will be financed through U.S. military aid. The U.S. provides Israel with $3.8 billion in military aid every year, allowing Israel to use U.S. government-approved financing to obtain major American military hardware. The United States is one of the main suppliers of arms and military equipment to Israel, also a staunch supporter of the occupying regime in its decades-long aggression against Palestinians. Israel is the largest cumulative recipient of U.S. foreign aid in the post-World War II era. In 2016, then-President Barack Obama signed an agreement with Israel providing $38 billion in U.S. military support over 10 years, including funding for the Iron Dome missile defense system. In 2022, the United States provided $1 billion in supplemental funding to replenish Israel's stock of missile interceptors for the Iron Dome. The United States and Israel also participate in a variety of security-related exchanges, including joint military exercises, research, and weapons development. While Israel is the U.S.'s closest ally, ties between the two have come under some strain. Netanyahu has yet to receive an official invitation to visit the White House from U.S. President Joe Biden, who made a rare public foray into Israel's domestic politics in March when he called for a compromise to this spat over Netanyahu's continuous plans to overhaul Israel's judiciary. And lawmakers in the U.S. have spoken out against Washington's military aid to Tel Aviv, with Senator Bernie Sanders and Congressman Jamal Bowman drafting a letter earlier this year to the Biden administration calling for a probe into whether Israel is using American weapons to commit human rights violations against Palestinians. Analysts say the United States' unwavering support for Israel has enabled and emboldened the right-wing Israeli cabinet's escalating violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, as Israeli forces targeted the densely populated Jenin refugee camp with air attacks and ground raids involving hundreds of troops on Monday. The White House again underscored what it called Israel's right to defend itself. Experts say that response reflects U.S. President Joe Biden's unwillingness to rein in his country's top ally in the West Asia, despite a pledge to center human rights in U.S. foreign policy, and as concerns around the scale of the Israeli attack in Jenin are mounting. Israel launched the attack on Jenin, one of many recent assaults on the refugee camp, on Monday, saying it is targeting Palestinian resistance groups. Palestinian resistance factions have pledged to retaliate against Israel in the wake of the deadly act of aggression. In a statement released on Monday, the Joint Chamber of Palestinian Resistance Groups urged all resistance fighters in Jenin and its refugee camp to stand by each other and fight the enemy in a unified manner. In response, Palestinian resistance fighters took up arms to defend the city. Footage from the battlefield showed an Israeli military helicopter airlifting the injured troopers. Reports say the regime's Rambam Hospital has acknowledged that two Israeli troops had been killed and others had sustained injuries. Also, the Palestinian resistance said it has inflicted heavy damage on Israeli forces in a number of ambushes.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد عودتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem. Inshallah, today we will talk about Ayah 58 of Surah An-Nisa on page 87. So brothers and sisters, the same as Fawad Haider and Ali Nasser, open your Quran, turn to page 87, Ayah what?
58.
Let's listen everybody to the recitation first.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إن الله يأمركم أن تؤدوا الأمانات إلى أهلها وإذا حكمتم بين الناس أن تحكموا بالعدل إن الله نعما يعظكم به إن الله كان سميعا بصيرا.
ما شاء الله. Nice recitation. Allah bless the reciter, inshallah. A very, very important point here, Allah Almighty says, and that's it. That's about delivering the trusts of people to themselves, okay, to the owners, the amanat, okay, and also about like judgment. Allah Almighty talks something, says something important. So let's see what Allah Almighty says then. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. Let me recite it once. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إن الله يأمركم أن تؤدوا الأمانات إلى أهلها وإذا حكمتم بين الناس أن تحكموا بالعدل إن الله نعم ما يعظكم به إن الله كان سميعا بصيرا. Very important points here. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَأْمُرُكُمْ O Muslims, indeed, O Muslims, because Allah Almighty talks to the Muslims. Yeah, it's not mentioned here, but totally Allah Almighty is mentioning the rules. Or even here, Allah Almighty talks in general, okay? In general. So indeed, Allah commands you to deliver the trusts, the amanat, okay? إِلَىٰ أَهْلِهَا to their rightful owners. Alright? وَإِذَا حَكَمْتُمْ بَيْنَ النَّاسِ and when you judge between people أَن تَحْكُمُوا بِالْعَدْلِ Allah Almighty commands you to what? To judge with fairness. إِنَّ اللَّهَ نِعِمَّا يَعِظُكُمْ بِهِ Excellent indeed is what Allah advises you. And إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ سَمِيعًا بَصِيرًا Indeed, Allah is all-hearing and
all-seeing.
All-seeing. So the very important point. One of the like the name, the titles of our Prophet, Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, was what was al-Amin, the trustworthy. Trustworthy. Even the, like Muslims were like leaving their trusts, okay, their properties before Prophet, and Prophet was a like keeping them for the friends and the other Muslims, okay. And even non-Muslims, the mushrikeen, the enemies of the Prophet, because Prophet was well known as a trustworthy person, okay, trustworthy person, okay. So the enemies would leave their properties before the Prophet, and Prophet was like keeping them safely, okay. And when the Prophet left in Laylatul Mabit, okay, in the night of the night that Prophet left the Mecca towards Medina, okay, Imam Ali alayhi salam slept in his bed. Yes, that day, that night, Prophet told Imam Ali alayhi salam that you stay here, okay, and I have some trusts from the people, okay, you have to deliver to them back, okay. Then Imam Ali alayhi salam delivered them, and he saw that, yeah, some trusts are from the enemies. Those who are plotting against the Prophet, those who are planning to kill the Prophet. Prophet had trust from them, and Prophet never what? Wronged to them. Even you should be that much trustworthy, okay, that your enemies should be able to put something as a trust before you, okay? And you should keep it. So إن الله يأمركم, this is أمر من عند الله, from Allah Almighty, أن تؤدوا الأمانات إلى أهلها. It could be many things. It's not only about properties. Look, a teacher, for example, me, I really have to be careful about my job, okay? Because for example, the students are the trusts, the amanat of their parents. Look. My teacher was telling me this important point. I loved this point, okay? He was always telling me that, Mr. Fasih, if you, okay, go and teach somewhere, you should be very much careful that these kids, the kids that they come and learn Quran from you, they come and learn Islamic studies from you, okay? They are the amanat from Lady Zahra and Imam Ali alayhi salam. They are the Shia of Ali. They are the followers of the Prophet. You should be very careful, okay? Should be very careful of what you teach them, how you behave with them. And he told me that your intention must be this, that whenever you go, you say, oh Allah Almighty, I'm going to help, okay, your slaves, your, okay, slaves, and also the Shia of Amir al-Mu'mineen. So please help me.
If you see the Holy Quran in Surah Muzammil, ayat number 20, Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala says, and recite as much as possible from the Quran. As much as possible. Rabbana.
That's why they say one of the beauties of the eloquence of the fasahat and balaghat of the Quran is that whenever you open the Quran, it's as if it speaks to you today very, very clearly.
The Quran is a covenant of God for His creature. It is misaq. It is covenant for His servants. It is necessary for the Muslims to read this covenant and recite 50 words every day.
That's all, guys. Time is running out. We have to go to the Tajweed rules. But yeah, that was the points that we mentioned. Okay, refer to the Tafasir books, inshallah, learn more about them. Brothers and sisters, it's time to mention some points, tajweed points, and then practice the recitation. So, إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَأْمُرُكُمْ. The first one is about the pronunciation of the word Allah. It's pronounced heavily if there is a fatha or a dhamma sound right before. إِنَّ has a fatha, Allah, so there is a fatha before Allah, pronounce it heavily. Yes, Ali Nasir?
Yes.
Inna Allaha ya'murukum an tu'addu. Hide the sound of noon sakin here in this word. An tu'addu al-amanat.
Skip
the waw, skip hamzatul wasl. Tu'addu al-amanati ila ahliha. وَإِذَا حَكَمْتُمْ أَهَا ميم ساكن plus ba hide the sound of
ميم
حَكَمْتُمْ بَيْنَ النَّاسِ أَن تَحْكُمُ أَن نون ساكن plus ta إخفاء hide the sound of نون here as well بالعدل جيم says it's okay if you stop or continue
قلقلة
yeah عدل ما شاء الله قلقلة دال on the dal bouncing sound عدل عدل إن الله نعمة ميم مشدد نون مشدد you should prolong it for two counts the sound okay and a nasal sound also يعظكم به يعظكم به ميم ساكن plus با the same as حكمتم بين الناس hide the sound of ميم يعظكم به قيلا tells you
It's better to stop.
So you stop here. It's better. إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ سَمِيعًا بَصِيرًا
إقلاب.
Change the sound of تنوين here to a hidden meme sound. سَمِيعًا بَصِيرًا. That's all. So, these points are important, okay? Now we will practice the recitation. Fawad and Ali Nasir, repeat after me. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
إن الله يأمركم أن تؤدوا الأمانات إلى أهلها وإذا حكمتم بين الناس
إن الله يأمركم أن تؤدوا الأمانات إلى أهلها وإذا حكمتم بين الناس
أحسن بين الناس وإذا حكمتم بين الناس أن تحكموا بالعدل
وَإِذَا حَكَمْتُمْ بَيْنَ النَّاسِ أَن تَحْكُمُوا بِالْعَدْلِ
إِنَّ اللَّهَ نِعِمَّا يَعِظُكُمْ بِهِ
إِنَّ اللَّهَ نِعِمَّا يَعِظُكُمْ بِهِ
أَحْسَنْتُمْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ سَمِيعًا بَصِيرًا
إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ سَمِيعًا بَصِيرًا
صَدَقَ اللَّهُ الْعَلِيُّ الْعَظِيمُ
صَدَقَ اللَّهُ الْعَلِيُّ الْعَظِيمُ
مَا شَاءَ اللَّهُ اللَّهُ بِلِسْ إِنْشَاءَ اللَّهُ That's all for today. Brothers and sisters, stay with IRIB English Radio, inshallah. Thank you so much, Fawad and Ali Nasir. Thanks for being with us today. Inshallah, we'll be here with you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتي
إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان